Shabbat Shalom. Because the session on intermarriage was exclusive to rabbis and off the record, I'm not actually at liberty to discuss with you the nature of the deliberations that took place 2 weeks ago at the Rabbinical Assembly meeting in Baltimore, the annual International Convention of Conservative Rabbis. The positions that were staked out, who said what, myself included, and whether it was white or black smoke that emerged at the session's conclusion, are, at least until the WikiLeaks release of the emails, private matters. Nevertheless, given the fact that everyone in this sanctuary does in fact breathe, what I can share with you is that in North America today, intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews does in fact exist. As is well known in the last Pew study, amongst non-Orthodox Jews who have gotten married since the year 2000, some 72% are intermarried, a statistic that undoubtedly plays out in many, if not all, of our families. The question on the table for all of American Jewry, and for reasons that I'll explain, especially the conservative movement, is how the rabbinic community should respond to this reality. To officiate or not officiate? That is the question. As a communal leader, as a teacher, an exemplar of our tradition, as a pastor to his flock, when a Jew falls in love with a non-Jew, should a rabbi stand under the chuppah to consecrate the affections of that couple? The session I attended would have never happened at a Reform or Orthodox rabbinical convention. In the case of the former, the decision to allow for officiation at intermarriages was decided some decades ago. In the case of the latter, it's a question that would never be countenanced or brought to debate. Presently, if a conservative rabbi, myself and or Rabbi Witkowski included, officiates at an intermarriage, it is cause for expulsion from the rabbinical assembly. And yet, as evidenced by the scheduling of the special session, clearly as a movement, we are squirming. Given the fact that neither intermarriage nor the debate of officiation is new, you may rightly wonder why the renewed discussion on the subject. Part of the answer is to be found in a recently published study from the Cohen Center of Brandeis University on the question. The survey studied some 1,200 post-birthright married couples who, roughly speaking, can be divided into three buckets. In-married couples for whom a rabbi was a sole officiant at their wedding, intermarried couples for whom a rabbi was a sole officiant at their wedding, presumably a Reform rabbi, and finally, intermarried couples who were married by a justice of the peace or other officiant. The study then followed the trajectories of these couples as to whether there were any differences in Jewish engagement in the years to follow. The brouhaha, if you will, that has emerged is the study's finding that when it comes to synagogue attendance, keeping kosher, Sabbath observance, or other indicators of Jewish engagement, while there is a large gap in Jewish engagement between those couples married by a rabbi and those not married by a rabbi, it is a statistical dead heat in Jewish engagement between those in-married and intermarried couples for whom a rabbi is a sole officiant. Simply put, couples with a rabbi officiating, in-married or intermarried, have a higher rate of future Jewish engagement. Given these findings, there are now those in the conservative movement understandably asking, despite the biblical and rabbinic prohibition on intermarriage, if the data points to the positive impact rabbinic officiation has in shaping the lives of these would-be Jewish families, then how can we not, as stakeholders in the Jewish future, be present for these couples at the chuppah? Should it all be at all surprising, they ask, if at the critical moment of establishing a home, their rabbi, and by extension the Jewish world, turns their back on them, then that these couples should then turn their back on Jewish life and living in the years to come. In an era of contracting synagogues and diminishing market share, is it not time that the conservative movement do the responsible and forward-looking thing by serving these couples and thus serve the Jewish future? The argument is a forceful one and not, let me state clearly, without its merits. It's a discussion that under Rabbi Zuckerman's direction, we will be having as a community into the months and the years to come, beginning with an April 4th session with Dr. Leonard Sachs, the director of the aforementioned center at Brandeis University. But before we start changing policy or getting me and my colleagues thrown out of the rabbinate, I would ask you to indulge me in hearing out a few thoughts on the matter. First and foremost, as the authors of the study itself acknowledge, their findings do not account for pre-existing differences in the couples studied. Is the relationship between rabbinic officiation and future engagement a causal one, or simply reflective of the disposition of those couples? Meaning, are the intermarried couples married by a rabbi more Jewishly engaged because a rabbi officiated at their wedding, or was their choice of having a rabbi at their wedding a reflection of the fact that they were already more inclined to be engaged? The study does not and cannot answer this question, and until it does, it strikes me as ill-considered to change thousands of years of Jewish tradition based on data whose meaning is yet to be fully understood. Second, and at risk of stating the obvious, conservative rabbis shouldn't jump to officiate at non-Jewish weddings because doing so is against Jewish law. Of course, Jewish law can and sometimes does change. Anyone who knows me would, I think, characterize and categorize me as a rather progressively minded conservative rabbi. And yet, if the definition of a Jewish wedding normatively or halachically, meaning according to Jewish law, is a wedding between two Jews, then rabbinic officiation should be reserved for such occasions. I do not begrudge a young Jew for falling in love with a non-Jew. Statistically speaking, in this day and age, it's intellectually indefensible to not be open to the possibility. More importantly, and speaking from the heart, from the depths of my heart, I get it. I really do get it. To fall in love with a non-Jew is a reflection of the powerful and beautiful effect two souls can have one upon the other, and not due to any defect or deficiency of character or the manner in which that person was raised. But just because a rabbi understands it does not mean he or she should be expected to condone it. Just as every individual has a right to choose his or her partner, Jewish law has a right to give expression to the limitations of what it can and cannot accommodate. As Truman Capote once wrote, the problem with living outside of the law is that you no longer have its protection, or in this instance, its sanction. It is symptomatic of the bespoke boutique nature of our age when the representatives of a tradition are called on to uproot that very tradition in response to the choices that people make. Not every choice Jews make gets to be validated by Jewish law. Not every decision receives the imprimatur of Judaism. Third, and perhaps most substantively, I don't think conservative rabbis should rush too quickly to perform intermarriages for the simple reason that as a parent, as a rabbi, as a Jewish educator, and as a shaper of Jewish community and identity, I unapologetically want young Jews to marry other young Jews. Rabbinic officiation at intermarriages signals an implicit and explicit leveling of the field, communicating the message that all choices are equal, a message that I do not think wise given the undisputed place in marriage has as a single most important determinant in ensuring Jewish continuity. Regardless of the legal prohibition or threat of expulsion, I fear that if conservative rabbis officiate at intermarriages, we will lose our ability to argue for the preeminent importance of in-marriage in our homes, in our synagogues, and in the community at large. The conservative movement, this synagogue included, has a unique, delicate, and critically important message to communicate and a role to play in the landscape of American Jewish life. First, we say loud and proud that we want young Jews to marry other young Jews. Second, if a Jew should fall in love with a non-Jew, as they are statistically more likely to do than not, then we want them to know that the path to conversion, to becoming a halachically defined Jew, is a warm, embracing, and altogether doable proposition, a subject to which I will turn to at some length 2 weeks from today. And third, should for whatever reason, and there are many reasons, conversion is not an option, then I want those interfaith couples to know that here at Park Avenue Synagogue and conservative synagogues like ours, we will help you build a Jewish family in future, all the while respecting the spiritual integrity of the non-Jewish member of your Jewish family. Less discussed than the Brandeis study was another report emerging out of Boston's Combined Jewish Philanthropies studying the demonstrable impact interfaith outreach, education, and engagement has on nurturing Jewish identity. As individuals, as families, and as a community, we must, on the one hand, live a model of Jewish life so vibrant that when our children and children's children grow up, they will lean in towards Jewish engagement. And when, because it's only a matter of when and not if, an intermarriage occurs, so too we must be just as passionate in creating a culture of warm embrace for Jew and non-Jew alike. The message isn't a simple one. It doesn't fit neatly on a Twitter feed, but that is what this community stands for. And tempting as it may be to change millennial-old policy on a dime, as open, as excited as I am for the communal conversation to come, it is a policy that will continue for the foreseeable future. The challenge of the conservative movement, as with any self-respecting organization, is how to maintain mission authenticity and market relevance at one and the same time. Ours is a time no different than that of Queen Esther, when Jews live amongst non-Jews, speak in the vernacular, adopt the names of our host society, and in some cases, many cases, integrate into the homes and hearts of our non-Jewish neighbors. The Reform and Orthodox movements have staked out their territory and should be commended for doing so. There is, I do believe, a differentiated and impactful role for the conservative movement as a movement loyal both to tradition and the realities of our time to play. No different than Queen Esther herself, at some point we must ask ourselves for what reason we have arrived at this station. In this case, on this issue, there is an identifiable reason and path forward that is ours to take. The only question is whether we will do so or not. I look forward to continuing sharing my vision for us 2 weeks from today. Shabbat Shalom.